Carroll to inbound it. The Raptors do not have a timeout left. Carroll finds DeRozan. DeRozan pushed. Joseph in the corner for the win. Got it! Corey Joseph in the corner for the win! They'll review it, but from my angle, it appeared as though he let it fly in time.
We got next. This is Free Association with Dave Zarum and J.D. Bunkus.
Welcome to Free Association. This is Sportsnet's weekly Raptors and NBA podcast. You know, J.D., I would like to take this opportunity, since everyone seems to be doing it these days, I would like to formally announce my retirement following the end of the season. From what, you ask? Without saying it, I just know that you're thinking it.
I'm hooked. I'm silent. You caused a hush to fall over the crowd.
A rare hush from J.D. Bunkus. I'm retiring from my shuffleboard league. It's just gotten too intense. Fist fights are too much.
You didn't retire. You got kicked out.
The racist heckling from the gallery is just unbearable.
That's a lot to take in. Big news.
I'm saying it's over, but you know, the good news really is that this show goes on. And we got a good one today.
How about that shot by Corey Joseph? That's the cojones, baby.
Love the shot. Love the pass from DeMar DeRozan. We're going to get into it a little later on whether or not DeRozan should have had the ball in his hands or not to begin with. But it was a great shot. It was a great play. An ugly game, but a good win. And Raptors have a tough week coming up here. But we're going to get into all of that this week on the show. Coming up, we have our big question of the week. We're going to play some catch and shoot about the Raptors. Talk Biombo, Lowry, Joseph, of course. Got to talk Terrence Ross and James Johnson as well. We'll, you know, take a little bit of the good with some of the not so good.
We should be giving Terrence Ross less minutes than he gets with the Raptors right now.
You know what?
Or the Raptors should give him less minutes than we give him. I don't know. Either way, one of the two.
That's exactly how I was gonna
take it up on Instagram, T. Ross.
Also, later on, the return of Jalen Rose to Free Association. I'm really excited about that. He's back on the pod for the extended round of the FAQ. And then after that, we're going to check in with Dalton Higgins.
Very cool dude.
Yeah, Dalton's a good guy. He's a Drake biographer. He's got a new book out, Rap and Roll. We're going to talk to him about...
That was almost my corner, Drake biographer.
Yeah,
I almost had that corner. Dalton came along, swooped in.
Pick up your beef with Dalton.
Maybe I will.
I think it's his corner now. So I'm going to say, life is not fair. After that, we're also going to look around the league. We got our market watch. Plenty of stuff going on.
Tons of stuff.
Can we get right to it?
Let's do it!
This is Damari Carroll of the Toronto Raptors, and you're listening to Free Association.
Okay, this is Free Association. Every week, our first block here, we started with the big question around Raptorland this week. And here it is. You ready?
I'm so ready.
Okay. Is Kyle Lowry the greatest point guard in Raptors history? I got to say, that's too easy for me. I want to tweak the big question already.
Yeah, that big question needs to be a little tweaked.
How about this? What is the ceiling for Kyle Lowry this season?
How about...
No,
sure.
How about answer that question? What is the ceiling for Kyle Lowry this season? Because he's playing the best basketball of his career, the best basketball you could say of any guard in the East.
No, not can you could get, say he is.
Can he get better? Does he get better than this
I
season?
Think this is the ceiling.
It's a pretty good ceiling.
Here's the thing. First of all, again, when we ask who's the best Raptors point guard of all time, I mean, Mike James is a friend of the show, so we're not going to just put it out there.
Yeah, listen, Kyle's first, Mike James a very close second,
very close. It was razor thin, Mike.
Sotomayor's rookie year, and then another friend of the show, Alvin Williams, but it's a pretty short list after that. Jose Calderon.
Yeah, Alvin Williams, also friend of the show. Harsh. This is a harsh question. Way to go, production team. No, Kyle Lowry, this has got to be peak Kyle Lowry, because he's been excellent. I can't get enough of Kyle Lowry right now. And why do I think that this is kind of his peak? Is that... Right now, he's the only point guard in the NBA with a stat category that, in point guards anyways, ahead of one Steph Curry. He's got more steals per game than him. He leads the league. We touched on it last week. Yeah. He continues to jump pass lanes and force great transition offense. He's second behind Steph Curry in made threes. He's absolutely crushing it from deep this season, shooting 43%. And again, like, these threes that he's hitting are the good shots. Like, he's getting clean looks. He's identifying when he is. He's shooting them from deep, and he's knocking them down. And he's fourth among point guards when it comes to rebounds per game. He's set. Oh, what is he? And when he's among the top guys in the NBA in win shares. Let's pull this up.
There's all sorts of stats that
he's
suggest
fourth.
That he's doing
he's fourth
great.
In win shares this year. You know who's he's in the class with there? Do you want to guess, like, the top five guys in win shares?
Yeah, it's going to be Steph, LeBron, Kawhi Leonard.
Yep.
Kyle Lowry. And an obvious guy I'm missing.
Russell Westbrook.
And Westbrook, yeah.
So he's ahead of.
Yeah, he's in that.
We're going to talk about a little bit later.
Those are his contemporaries right now.
That's what. So he's ahead of in win shares right now. A guy that I had to double check his box scores because I saw an email. I was like, wait, I've been watching his games even, and I have to double check. And Paul George. Paul George is having an unbelievable season.
We're going to talk about him
Kyle
later.
Kyle Lowry, still ahead of him. He's third in plus minus. And again, all he's with these guys are just the NBA's elite. These are not a no joke stats. Kyle Lowry is playing out of his freaking mind right now.
It's a huge reason why the Raptors are playing relatively well right now. They're not hitting that skid. I think there's a bit of concern after that West Coast trip, and I think it kind of eased off a little bit.
They have their concerns, but one of them right now is
Lowry
not Kyle
is
Lowry.
And you know, the thing, you know, you talked about him pouncing on defense, kind of filling the lanes a little bit, and that's part of what's impressed me most about Lowry so far is the versatility he's showing in moving over to the two and playing alongside Joseph.
I love
playing
that.
Off the ball.
I love that.
You know, Blake Murphy wrote a cool piece for sportsman.ca.
He does. He
writes
cool
looking
pieces.
Looking at those two together, kind of an analytics piece about them when they share the court. And the cool thing is defensively, it does allow Lowry to, Murphy put it as, he called him like a free safety on defense. And
he's a rover.
Exactly. And that's why you see that steals total so high up there. But offensively, like you're saying, the threes, I mean, he's becoming a smart spot up shooter, something he's able to do. It's something that this team needs from him too when you look around at other guys who aren't holding up their end of the bargain as far as 3-point shooting goes.
The crazy thing to me is that last season when we were doing the hashtag NBA All-Star ballot thing,
and I never
everybody,
want to hear that again.
Everybody was going nuts about Kyle Lowry, and rightfully so. He was carrying the load for a long stretch of the season on his own when DeMar DeRozan went down with the tendon injury. This even seems like he had the weight loss and people were wondering, and this is how ridiculous this is. Remember when he lost all the weight and I was like, I wonder if it's going, how it's going to affect him. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't sure it was going to be a positive.
Shocker, positively.
Yeah, unbelievably so. That's what I mean. He's taken another step. So when we say ceiling, I mean, to be the best point guard in the Eastern Conference, ahead of John Wall, ahead of Jeff Teague.
He's got, I'm not a huge stats guy, but PER, he's the top ranked guard in the East in PER, point guard or shooting guard.
Yep.
The numbers back it up, and it's, Raptors got to be loving it. It was interesting to see, you know, you mentioned that Joseph buzzer beater from the Wizards game this past weekend. It was interesting to see Kyle Lowry as your decoy, you know, and you put the ball in DeRozan's hands and said, when Lowry's clearly kind of playing the best ball of his life, best of anyone on the team. But I want to get into that a little bit later. Some other rap stuff I want to talk about. JV being gone and the bigs who are stepping up in his place.
What we've seen. Okay, so the first guy I want to get to is Patrick Patterson. Because
not Bismack Biyombo.
No, because last week I told you when you asked me who's the guy that you want to see step up in his absence. And I said, Patterson needs to be better. So prior to the JV injury, Patterson was 17 of 53 from three, shooting 32%. Really not what you needed to see from this guy.
You
for a guy
see that,
that
a good 10% up.
If you're labeled a stretch four, you better stretch the floor. Last four games, sans JV, he's shooting 43% from deep. Much improved. And you can see that confidence and that swagger back with him a little bit. And I really like that. And the thing about Patrick Patterson is he's a guy that really needs to play. I was looking up his couple of his splits as I tend to do. And this season, when he averages 20 or more minutes per game, he's shooting 42% from the floor and 36% from three. And he's a plus 16. When he averages less than 20 minutes, he's 30% from the field and the same from three and is a minus four. So he's using the time and he's being a productive player. And again, he's been a solid rebounder. He's averaging 5.25 a game. I really like what I'm seeing from Patrick Patterson right now. This is his niche. This is the guy he needs to be. Very impressed with Pat. You feel kind of the same?
Yeah, well, I like, you know, I don't think he's even there yet. I think
he can go a little higher.
For sure. He's still easing back into it, but I like what I've seen. You know, he's not afraid to shoot it, which is always a good sign.
That's all I want. I want to see that confidence.
But he seemed a little gun shy earlier on, and that was the real troubling part. Now he's getting his shots up, they're starting to fall, and it makes a huge impact on the way this team plays. It makes an impact on the way you have to guard them. It's just
the Raps are making the extra pass to find him right now too, exactly, on the floor. When you're seeing defenses
collapse, they recognize this guy's a huge part of our success, even off the bench. But a guy who's starting real quick here, Bismack Biyombo. I love the job he's doing in JV's place. It's hard not to. He's really playing within himself. Maybe you'd say you'd like to see the minutes go down a bit. He's averaging around 32, 33 minutes a game since JV's gone down. Mm-hmm. But he's bringing it, man. He's bringing exactly what you brought him here to do.
Okay, so let me start with the good. And the good is that he's averaging almost 13 rebounds a game as a starter. He's been a beast on the glass. I think he's an agitator. I think he gets under people's skin. He's not afraid. He doesn't back down from anybody. You look at that game against LeBron.
Totally.
He's not afraid to get in LeBron's face.
Another cool Biyombo attribute is that when you talk to the guys on the team, this is the first thing they all bring up. He's a huge talker on the court. I'm not talking like trash talking.
Yeah,
like,
no, he's a communicator.
Which is, as from your center, that's everything.
And the last couple of games, he's been blocking shots like an absolute beast. He had some ridiculous highlight reel blocks the other night against Phoenix. He had four in his last two contests, so protecting the rim really well.
On the weekend,
and I think that the Raptors deserve a little success. And again, we talked about how good Kyle Lowry is. He's so good that he's playing pick and roll with Bismack Biyombo, and he's getting him looks close to the basket where he needs to be. Because as I said before, when Biyombo starts to float away from the basket a little bit, that's where you start to see ugly Bismack, where he starts to play outside of himself a little bit. Here's the bad, though. As much as he's kind of passing the eye test right now, the numbers say that the offense has taken quite the dip without Jonas Valanciunas.
Which is perfectly natural.
It is,
as it should.
Right now, offensive rating-wise, the Raptors are 13 points less per 100 possessions.
Did you expect it otherwise?
No, I didn't expect otherwise. I'm just saying that like while we're excited about what we're seeing from Bismack in terms of like he has been a positive, the Raps have won three of their last four games. We're coming off of a little bit of a high off of Drake Knight. And of course, like I was even going to mention you off the very top of the show, was that Washington win, getting that win and beating them that way felt really good.
Of course.
But if they would have done that up against the Suns, it wouldn't have felt the same. Like knowing that you went into the gym of the team that swept you and kind of having an off night, but still getting it done in a gutty way with your new guys.
The guys you brought in to beat a team like Washington.
It felt really good. And even now, like smile kind of washing over my face a little bit here. Like, Kojo, ooh, so good. I loved playing that clip. So, again, I'm very happy with what we're seeing from Bismack, but no, there's no doubt in my mind that the Raptors are a much better team when Jonas Valanciunas is out there.
Yeah, but they're...
Let's not discredit JV, that's all.
Of course not. But they are they're staying afloat pretty impressively with guys like Biyombo holding up their end of the bargain. Listen, when you look ahead at the Raptors' schedule this week, one game rules all, and that is Saturday's matchup with the Golden State Warriors. We have to talk about that. You know what? You're right. Let's skip it.
Kobe's coming to town, though. It's his last time here. I'm just saying.
You know what, JD? I'm just going to go ahead and make an executive decision here.
Is the Warriors game bigger if the Warriors drop one before they come to Toronto? Does that tilt the scales?
Well, this gets into what I was going to get into.
Okay.
So when the Warriors come here, we're taping this on a Monday afternoon, Monday early evening.
It's dark outside.
The Warriors are undefeated right now. Tonight they play the Utah Jazz in Utah.
They're going to thump them.
So, yeah, it's hard. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the Warriors are going to win. They're going to be undefeated when you're listening to this podcast on Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday or Friday or Saturday before the Raptors game. There's such a huge chance this team comes into Toronto undefeated. Okay, a lot I want to get to here. First thing I want to ask you is when you look at the Warriors, I mean, how far is this going to run? Who's going to be the team that ousts the Warriors? Because I will say this, when you look at their schedule coming up, it is weak. It is incredibly weak, but they are on a 7-game road trip that starts tonight.
Yeah.
Monday night.
So here's what I'd say. If I had to guess who it's going to be, kind of tough, but I would say based on this road trip, there's two teams, and one of them is Toronto. Toronto's going to be one of their tougher outs on this trip. The other one's probably going to be the Pacers. So I think that the Pacers are pretty red hot right now. They're comfortable in that small ball lineup. That's the only thing, though, is that I wonder sometimes if anybody's going to beat this Golden State team playing small ball because nobody plays small ball like Golden State. I believe the Warriors have their eye on that 33 win streak. The Lakers, 33 wins in a row.
Right, right, for the Wilt era.
I think that they are playing with a swagger and a confidence that I don't think I've never even seen it like this, like where it's a whole team. Like the Jordan Bulls were something, and Jordan had an attitude about them when they were going to win every night.
This team's going for that 72 win mark, no question.
That's what I'm saying. I don't think they're going to let up. Like, I don't think you're going to see them have that off night or that trap game or anything like that. I think that they're just going to continue to roll through people. And I mentioned this before, one of the cool things about the Warriors, they go down by a bunch of buckets and they fling the threes and the threes start dropping. And then all of a sudden it's a blink of an eye and they're right back in it.
And, you know, the guy who's front and center with all that, obviously, is Steph Curry. And it's interesting, you know, I was watching, you know how you get on those YouTube. Oh, he's pretty good himself. You know how you get on those, like, YouTube chains?
And, like, yeah, of course.
You start with one
wormhole.
Video.
Wormhole. Yeah, YouTube wormhole.
So somehow I ended up watching the All-Star Fantasy Draft from, like, a TNT show years ago with Barkley and all those guys. And they were drafting the greatest teams of all time. Mm-hmm. It's the clip, you probably know, it's a clip where Barkley takes Allen Iverson first overall because he got confused and thought it was a draft for an all-star game and not the all-time draft.
Yeah.
So he's like, first pick overall, Allen Iverson.
Good pick. Not a horrible pick.
But so I was watching that unfold, right? And I was thinking, like, this was like 4 years ago, maybe. I'm thinking, like, so if you did that today, where would Curry be on that list? Because I know he's got the one championship, the one MVP, but what we're seeing now is like unprecedented.
It's crazy because in the LeBron James era, like, listen, guys have won MVP. Like, Kevin Durant won an MVP in the LeBron James era.
No one's Derek doing it
Rose,
like this guy.
But I know, that's what I'm saying. Derrick Rose won an MVP in the LeBron James era. But there's never been a time where we had a conversation of, is Kevin Durant the best player in the NBA and was taken seriously?
Like, we're gonna,
or
we're
is
gonna,
Derrick Rose the best player in the NBA? Like, now we're doing that with Steph, and it has...
You know, LeBron's kind of getting overshadowed a bit, and he's having an amazing season. But right now, like, Curry is the best player. It's not a huge debate.
When we talked about win shares earlier with Kyle Lowry.
Right. Yeah, where's Curry at?
First, but he's a 4.9. The next closest is 3.5 with Russ Westbrook. So, like, that's towering above the competition. Everybody else is in the low threes.
My point is that if you were doing that all-star draft today, would Curry go past the second or third round? You're drafting all-time teams. Like, he's right up there already.
He's such a ridiculous offensive weapon. And
he can play D too, that's the thing.
Yeah, he's really good at doing some of the same things that Kyle Lowry does, though. He's very instinctive, and he knows when to kind of jump on a guy and pick off a steal. Not the top front guy, or he's not going to press you or push you, but yeah, he's very adept at getting steals. The thing for me is that he's not just a great three-point shooter. He's a great shooter everywhere on the
right,
floor.
Right.
And he seems to have mastered these. I was talking to Alvin Williams about this today, just on the phone quickly, about how he does these shots that it seems like he's like a pool player. He's like a experienced pool player that can do trick shots where you watch him and it's routine to him.
Exactly.
To the layman, you're like, that's impossible.
Exactly.
Where he's driving full speed into the lane. And then a big comes and helps off the pick and roll, and he just throws something up on the glass, high glass, and it just drops right in. He's unguardable.
Sorry, so did you say which team specifically would be the one to beat the Warriors?
Well, I said the Raptors and the Pacers would give them the toughest challenge.
But do you see? I don't see those teams beating them.
Well, yeah, like I said, it's tough to play small ball.
They gave them a tough game, but they also had a huge comeback, and you can't replicate that.
But that's the other guy I really want to touch on quickly when we talk about the Warriors.
Okay, let me just say quickly, there's one team in the NBA that can beat the Spurs. I mean, the Warriors.
Who will it be?
The Mavericks.
Oh, the Mavericks.
No, it's the Spurs. Give me a break.
You know what? I think that...
Quietly killing it. Are the San Antonio Spurs, as always.
Yeah, I like the Spurs.
Like, if we're talking about a playoff series, I don't think anyone will beat the Warriors.
Oh, no. See, I think I have a team that's ahead of the Spurs.
Bust it out.
OKC. And I have Spurs as third. OKC 1, Cleveland 2,
okay.
Spurs 3. I just think that you need guys that can go mano a mano star power.
Right.
And the star power factor is Russ, KD, Ibaka.
How incredible would, like, a shooting tête-à-tête between Curry and Durant in a Western Conference Finals.
That's what I mean. You need to be able to have guys that match up well. The problem with the Spurs is that I just have a tough time seeing Tony Parker and Patty Mills keeping up with Steph Curry for an entire series.
Patty Mills quietly one of the fastest guys in the league.
Yeah, and Danny Green will take some of those responsibilities. I just don't think that they have
I think you can stick Kawhi on him.
I just don't think that they're going to be able to beat them in a 7-game series, especially when they're going to have home court advantage.
And there are no court advantages like that one out in Oakland. Really quickly here, Raptors, their chances legitimately. What do you expect on Saturday?
I actually expect a much better game than they had last time, which isn't saying much because there was a first quarter drubbing.
And they still
last time when it was in Toronto.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was one of the ugliest games. So I was there. I'm so glad I got to spend $20 a pop for the beers. I was at that game. I needed them. But yeah, the Raptors are obviously in tough. And the last thing I quickly wanted to say on the Warriors was I really believe Draymond Green is such a unique animal. Everybody's trying to do these small ball lineups and have an effective guy that does that same role. But there's only one Draymond Green. There's only one guy that can guard 5 through 3 or 2 and shoot threes like he can and add attitude to his team like he is. I love Draymond. I love watching him play. And I think he's a real big part of what makes the Warriors so special. They're going to have their hands full with him too. I don't like the Raptors' chances in this, but that's not really saying much.
Yeah, I don't like the NBA's chances against the Golden State Warriors. Okay, listen, coming up on Free Association, really excited about this. We're going to have Jalen Rose. And we're also going to talk about some Drake night. And Mr. Drake with our new friend Dalton Higgins. But right now, Jalen Rose coming up on Free Association.
Sporting event in the world this year. The fight of the century. A decade in the making. In the lead-up, Mayweather-Pacquiao set records in every way that boxing can. It was to be the Ali Frazier or Tyson Holyfield of its time. And everyone had an opinion, at least until the bell rang. That it didn't live up to the hype almost didn't matter, because it reminded the sporting world how big a big fight can be. And those are the kinds of moments that create memories that last a lifetime. Like welcoming the world to the Women's World Cup and Pan Am Games, cheering on our athletes and witnessing greatness along the way, or watching Serena Williams stretch for yet another return and win title after title, or waiting for the Stanley Cup to arrive so Jonathan Toews can raise it in front of a home crowd for the first time in 77 years. And of course, that little bat flip in the 7th inning of Game 5 of the ALDS.
The 1-1. Bautista drives it deep left field. Gone! The Blue Jays dugout has erupted as they greet Bautista at the edge of the track. Suddenly it is 6-3 for Toronto.
It's those moments and dozens more of the most breathtaking and heartbreaking from 2015 that we celebrate in our 5th annual Year in Sports special edition.
That story and more can be found in the latest issue of Sportsnet magazine on newsstands now.
2015 Stanley Cup champions are the Chicago Blackhawks.
Hi, this is Muggsy Bogues. When I wake up in the morning, I'm listening to Free Association.
It's been a long time coming. It's going to be a long time gone.
I need a peace to be alone.
This is Free Association. I'm Dave Zarum. He's J.D. Bunkus. J.D., a few weeks ago, we had Jalen Rose on the show, who was excellent, not surprisingly.
Understatement.
But we have Jalen Rose back on the show, back for more to do our favorite Q&A.
The FAQ.
The FAQ.
You don't get to leave without doing the FAQ. It was a huge oversight on our part. We got Jalen back. We did the FAQ, and here it is.
Asking the tough questions the other shows are too scared to ask. It's Free Association Quiz with
the one and only Jalen Rose.
What's the worst job you ever had?
The worst job I ever had. Ooh, I had some bad jobs. All right. Well, I had a few of them. Pumping gas. I guess I could be saying someone. I'm thinking of pumping gas at the gas station, being a paper boy, working at an envelope company, working for Being Steel. Oh, man. Working with adults that were did not care I was a high school All-American. You mess up on that press, it's going to be a problem.
All right. If any teammate of yours in the past or present at ESPN, if any teammate could survive a zombie apocalypse, who would it be?
The Davis brothers, Dale and Antonio.
Yeah. Nice, yeah. Okay, Nicki Minaj or Taylor Swift?
Nicki Minaj. I love her being with Meek Millie. Now, he stepped into a ring with a gorilla, the sixth god, and I know he got put back into humility, but I like them as a couple, and I'll take Nicki.
Hey, man, the whole Drake thing, if you were a player and you had a guy like that attached to the team, would that really help you, give you incentive to sign with the Raptors? Like, if you were in that
of
situation?
Of course it would. Yeah? Are you serious?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Look at how much Bravis loved it.
A lot of times people don't want to embrace it, but hip-hop transcends what we see in corporate America. Mm-hmm. It's just an absolute fact. The music and the advertising, the commercials, everybody dancing, playing, this is how we do it. Like, that's what it's become. And fortunately for Toronto, not only do you guys have a great ambassador, but he just happens to be arguably the hottest rapper and the dopest rapper in the game.
Yeah. We had Montel Jordan here the
other day.
Of course
you should allow him, and he's a basketball fan. Like, that's a no-brainer. Standing ovation to Masai and yeah. Whoever else decided to make that truly official.
Might be a little too far, though, rebranding the jerseys to be the black and gold, though. Maybe, just maybe.
No, he's giving the people what they want, right?
And we're in the era of teams having 15 jerseys.
Yeah.
That's why you appreciate the signature teams that never change their logo.
Lakers, Celtics. Okay, next one here. Your favorite thing you can only get in Canada?
A Virtu watch.
Oh, that's a good one.
Not that you can't buy it anywhere in the world, but I was dumb enough to do it in Canada. It cost me $15,000.
All right. When's the last time you cried at a movie?
Boys in the Hood.
That's a long
time
ago. So
it's a while ago.
Trey got shot.
So yeah. It's been a while.
That's it as well. You know what's the most surprising one? The answer we always get is Titanic.
Not going to be able to do it.
All right. What's the most starstruck you've ever been?
Holly Berry.
Yeah, good answer.
All right, now the next one was your first celebrity crush.
Same thing.
Not necessarily mutually exclusive, but I had so many, but I'll just give her the Lifetime Achievement Award.
All right, very last one. What's your best Halloween costume you've ever worn?
Best Halloween costume. Well, in my neighborhood, when I was little, I should just be a hobo. I just get a skinny
easy one.
I put a bandana.
It's actually pretty ingenious.
That's like I used to be a ghost.
How about a Jason Voorhees mask?
Yeah.
When nice. I got that, I was feeling myself.
Nice.
Welcome back to Free Association. I'm J.D. Bunkus. That's my man Dave Zarum right there. Again, much love to Jalen Rose. Thank you so much for
that
doing
great,
that again.
Yeah.
Really funny guy. Really good dude. Very generous with his time. I don't think his jobs... I think pumping gas is a little bit easier as a worse job than... I worked as a mover. That was pretty tough.
In the heart of winter, pumping gas is a pretty tough
one. Yeah, but you get the gloves. You go out. You sit there. You go back in. I think he's overselling a little bit. But the thing that really stuck out from doing the FAQ with him was hearing what he had to say about Drake and hearing from...
Right, yeah.
A former player and someone who's not like we hear Toronto Raptors talking right now about how great Drake is and how it's great having him around the team, but that's kind of what you have to hear. No one's gonna say any different. So for a guy like Jalen Rose, who gives the people what they want and tells it like it is, to have him say that he believes that Drake has an effect on the Raptors, really neat. And we wanted to dive a little bit further into the topic.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, Jalen genuinely kind of changed my position on the Drakester.
On the Drakester?
People
You're tight like that, eh?
Well, they should call him that if they don't.
If he was a hockey player, would he be Drakey or Drakes?
He'd be Grams. That's his last name.
Yeah, maybe.
Just add an S to it. Draker.
Obbs?
Well, you know, fresh off of Drake night, I think everyone, we're only a week removed. Everyone's still talking about it, talking about Drake's influence on this team, which is pretty massive. Our next guest is Dalton Higgins, who is a Drake biographer. He's written a biography on Drake. And his newest book is called Rap and Roll. And it's looking at the crossover between music and pop culture. And, you know, when we mentioned Drake, the one thing that kind of I'm continually blown away by is just the reach this guy has on pop culture, like the scope of his influence. It's really massive, isn't it, Dalton?
Yeah, no, totally is. I mean, I wrote a whole chapter devoted to that. I mean, the guy has, well, today, I mean, he has like about 27 million followers on Twitter.
Crazy.
While most people have like, you know, 400 or 500. I mean, mm-hmm. his reach on popular culture, it's unbelievable.
And it's the kind of thing where too, like, I mean, even by musician standards, I mean, you don't see other, not even just rappers, just other musicians, other artists have this kind of influence over what people are wearing and saying and et cetera. And you see it obviously manifest with the Raptors in a huge way.
Oh, for sure. I mean, when you see, you know, Toronto city councilors, Norm Kelly, right. The Hotline Bling, I mean, that's when you know you've done something. Let's be real. I mean, City Hall is, you know, baby boomers. I mean, it's mm-hmm. unbelievable.
We're talking to Dalton Higgins, award-winning journalist, author, broadcaster, blogger. He's got his sixth book coming out, Rap and Roll, Pop Culture, Darkly Stated, a collection of pop culture essays. It'll be out December 4th, so make sure you check that out. It'll be in bookstores all over Toronto. Toronto's annex neighborhood, actually, I'm being told. The one thing for me, Dalton, I look at this guy, the thing I find very interesting, and I'm curious to kind of get your spin on this. I look at him, and I wonder, like, you've got a group of players, I think, in the NBA where it seems to me like he would resonate more than former players, and I think that's one kind of advantage the Raptors have when it comes to teams. Let's be real. All of a sudden you're going to go to Toronto and then Drake is the one pitching you on something. I feel like now we're almost in a phase where the younger kids or younger players would be more interested in hearing what Drake has to say about a city than a former NBA player that would have played 20 years ahead of them.
Oh, in a major way. I mean, you see, this is the interesting thing about Toronto, right? So Toronto is still arguably one of the most multicultural cities on the planet. And, you know, that means something different to, you know, basketball enthusiasts of today, right? Now, what I like to do is I like to juxtapose the Raptors with, like, let's say the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, MLSE. Now, in my view, and I've written about this, you know, Canada in general, you know, Toronto in particular, has always mostly been about, you know, beer, hockey, rock and roll, sort of traditionalist, kind of old school. Drake represents that new, or that new is like you're saying, pop culture, you know? So Drake is essentially, you know, reinvented sports culture in general and basketball culture in general, right? In particular. So he's going to resonate. I think Drake's going to resonate more in a city like this that is new, fresh, diverse, mm-hmm. Where there are just a lot more new possibilities than if it were, you know, some other city, you know, like let's say you're in, you know, Houston Rockets, for example. You know, you have rappers, they have, you know, big rappers there, you know, Scarface, Bun B, for those that are hip hop enthusiasts.
Of course. Yep.
They come out to a game, they support the team. It's just not as big a deal. You know, Drake is kind of like the zeitgeist, you know, it's a whole paradigm shift as it's the way you look at sports, yeah, the way you look at basketball.
Exactly.
Drake represents that. Yeah.
And to JD's point, I mean, when you see stuff like the OVO Fest in the summer and guys like Kevin Durant coming back year after year, having a relationship with players of that kind of magnitude, I think it's mostly wishful thinking that players would come here. But, you know, we just had Jalen Rose on the show talking about how it's a very real connection between players and Drake and that, you know, it is enough incentive for someone to sign in Toronto just to be affiliated with this guy. I mean, people are begging to be affiliated with Drake.
Well, I think that the biggest thing in terms of his influence for the NBA when it comes to actually, like, attracting players is, again, the fact that you're able to at least get your foot in the door. And we've talked about this before. I think that there's, from every account, and we've spoken with him multiple times, and there is that magnetism to Masai Ujiri. So being able to have kind of an agent that's able to get Masai's foot in the door and be able to pitch his basketball vision to someone, I think that's huge. But the other thing I wanted to get your thought on, Dalton, was if there's something that's kind of understated or if there's something that's kind of overstated about Drake when it comes to his relationship with the Toronto Raptors. Because I mentioned to Dave, I think that one of my big things too is the, like, the revenue stream he provides when it comes to the OVO gear, and the fact that I think that, and we were thinking maybe not to do this, but women. Women are all of a sudden buying way more apparel. And I think that women, when it comes to buying sports apparel, probably wasn't a huge market. And now all of a sudden it is.
Oh, for sure. I mean, now, so there are a couple of things here. I mean, as far as the actual, you know, Toronto Raptors basketball team, so, you know, we're still in the Eastern Conference and faring quite well. But, you know, there's kind of like a bit of a smokescreen effect, right? Where, in my opinion, Drake is almost making the Raptors appear like a better product. You know, they appear a little bit better than they actually are on the court, you know? This is in the court of public opinion, though,
right?
So, you know, so you can release a Hotline Bling video and it go viral. You know, that's still not going to get the Raptors out of the East.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They still got swept by Washington. They have to deal with LeBron and the Cavs, right? The Bulls are still quite good. So when you strip away the hype and hoopla, I think there's a bit of a smokescreen effect where people are looking at Toronto as a destination. There's no question. Given, you know, some of the recent histories where it was a city that players previously wanted nothing to do with, right? When you talk to ballers, or like myself, I'm a former baller, I'm in that scene, and it's just like most American balls coming out of the NCAA, you know, D1, D2, you know, they're kind of like, why come to Canada to play ball,
right?
The taxation's different, the culture is completely different than the other major markets in the U.S., right?
I spend
a lot of time in the U.S. It's completely different, all right? Now, that being said, despite all of that, I mean, even with Drake on board as a global ambassador and being, you know, sitting courtside, Toronto still hasn't even really landed any, you know, like a blue chip prospect, a game changer, you know, big time free agent. Like, we're not even close.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you can argue Damari Carroll's the biggest free agent they've ever signed.
Precisely, and that's and he's a, you know, he's a great player, but he's kind of like a role player. That's not saying much.
He's not a marquee huge name. No,
yeah,
question.
He was the fifth name on a team last year.
Precisely. He's not a game changer in that way. With all due respect to Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, they're good, but are they, you know...
But also, those guys were drafted and traded here. You know, they didn't sign.
Precisely. They are not what is considered, you know, ultimate A-list, you know, the NBA's elite. You know, they're the players that come, you know, they bring their lunch buckets, they get the job done, right? But you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, totally, exactly. I mean... And it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I always thought the Drake thing was really overplayed when it came to the Raptors. Jalen kind of changed my mind. I won't lie, JD. Jalen really changed my mind in terms of how players really do respect this guy. But Dalton, my last question for you here, man. I mean, so we mentioned, you know, you've written a biography on Drake. Obviously, you know his story so well. When we talk about him and this new connection with the Raptors, I mean, I'd imagine from his perspective, so much of that is just a matter of a guy, like a local kid, being able to fulfill some kind of dream by having his name attached to the team he grew up watching. And it's as simple as that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is the one thing, going back to, you know, give you a bit of Drake history here. So he's very much into basketball, much like many rappers. Secretly and privately, you know, most NBA basketball players, you know, want to be rappers, okay? And they say that most, you know, elite rappers, you know, want to be basketball players. Like,
for sure.
It goes in reverse, you know? That's just what it is, right? So a lot of these guys, you know, they kind of invest money, you know, outside of the public sight lines into recording studios, they fund rappers, that type of thing. Now, Drake's aligned with the Toronto Raptors. I mean, it just, you know, at the end of the day, it makes basketball in this city the go-to sport, okay? Like, you know, one might even argue that, you know, the way the Raptors have embraced Drake and hip-hop and, you know, popular culture, it sort of makes the other, you know, MLSC team, the Leafs, seem extremely boring, okay?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, that's not to diss the Leafs, but, I mean, they're still playing, like, traditional, you know, rock and roll at Leaf games.
Yeah, you're going to see Bon Jovi banner, and they're playing Bon Jovi on the system.
It's become Drake versus Bon Jovi, yeah. Exactly.
That's what it's become, you know? So youth here that are, you know, very diverse, multicultural, they're youth here from across seven continents. When I say youth, I'm using that term loosely. Mm-hmm. You know, teenagers, 20-something, 30-something, 40-something, they don't care to hear traditional rock and roll. They want to hear hip-hop. And Drake sits atop that list of hip-hoppers, you know, globally, Billboard, he's a Billboard chart topper. So that's where the, you know, the connection is made, you know? And then the OVO brand, too, I just wanted to, you know, for a wrap-up, I mean,
for sure.
The OVO, you know, this is the other piece, the OVO, like, I spoke to my kids about this, okay? I have a 16-year-old daughter and a 9-year-old son, and the interesting thing, it's interesting hearing from them, you know, about the Raptors, right? Because, you know, we go to a couple games when we can here and there, and they're like, you know, they say, Dad, if we want to go to one game this year, can we go to Drake Night so we can get that OVO, you know, long-sleeve T-shirt?
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. We don't even care so much about the product on the court. Or how the Raptors fare during Drake Night, you know, whether they win or lose that night.
You're part of an event, you're part of a movement.
That's kind of like me too, though. I'm not going to any game of any sport if it's not a giveaway night. Like, that's just, I want a bobblehead. Like, I wanted the JV backpack thing. or Amir Johnson bobblehead. Like, those are the only things that got me in the building.
Partly Drake, mostly human nature.
Yeah. Mostly I'm just poor and I want to get the Drake's t-shirts to sell online. I need the extra income.
The secondary market.
I've gone to a couple games where people, you know, next to me, they just want to see him, you know, occupying those court seats.
Right. They want to be in the same room.
You'll have some celebrity guests, right?
Yeah. Sometimes I've been there with a girl, and the first thing that you do when you sit down is Drake here tonight. Yeah, Drake, first question.
Exactly. It's the place to be. It's where you want to be if you live in Toronto, right? Just to get a view of Drake.
And it's wild. I mean, it's really, I can't think of too many, like I said, artists, musicians, et cetera, who've kind of reached that status in terms of their influence on others. Dalton Higgins, really appreciate it, man. The book is called Rap and Roll, out December 4th. Dalton, where can people hit you up on Twitter and social media and whatnot?
Yeah, Twitter and Instagram. You can get me at DaltonHiggins5.
Awesome, man. Really appreciate you doing this. Hopefully we can catch up again down the line.
Thank you.
All right, thanks a lot to Dalton Higgins again for that. That was cool. Make sure you check out his book. I feel like we only scratched the surface of what we could have talked about there with Dalton.
Dalton seems a lot smarter than I am.
You know what?
Just putting that out there.
I think you might be right.
Maybe.
So, listen, right now we have some more Raptors topics. Raptors talking
points. I don't know what these are, so I'm excited.
I don't either. This is our segment, Catch and Shoot. Quick way to get a quick question and answer. The latest in Raptor land. Let's get right to it.
Don't hesitate. Just catch and shoot.
DeMar DeRozan.
3 seconds. Gets it to DeRozan. DeRozan's fading. What a tough shot. And it goes! It goes! DeMar DeRozan wins it!
Does he still get the last shot?
When was that game?
I have no idea what that was.
What was that?
That was great. That was a lot. Matt Devlin gets so excited. I love it. It's just like Buck Martinez when he calls home runs.
Swing and a drive.
It was against Orlando from a couple years.
That was a clip from a couple years ago. Okay, but, so should he still get the ball?
Yeah, actually, I remember that game against Orlando. Yes, of course. Yeah. I'm being told, duh. Okay, sorry.
Of course we'd play it.
Yeah.
Our producer's saying, of course we'd play that clip. Of course we'd play the clip from 2 years ago for this this DeRozan question. But it is a good question because he's been struggling late in games. So the question was, would you want him to have the last shot?
No. Kyle Lowry, and I've said it before to you, Kyle Lowry, better shooter, better ball handler, better decision maker. The only thing against him is that he's shorter. Like, what's the case for DeMar?
Well, I have no problem with DeMar with the ball in his hands at the
I didn't say I had a problem with it. I'm just saying who's my preferred guy.
Yeah, shot Lowry, but I am not complaining if DeRozan has a ball in his hands because I like we saw against Wizards, the fact that he has options. He can get to the line, initiate contact, he can pass out. He'll probably take a tough shot.
One thing against me, quickly. They tried to go to Kyle Lowry for the game winner against Phoenix and it failed. They're the game tire.
Right.
And when they went to DeMar DeRozan in Washington, they won. So there's that. Take that as you will.
Next up,
Terrence Ross.
Here's Ross for three. Way, way wide. And here's it from the crowd.
So what does he do to deserve 16 minutes a night?
Oh, nothing.
He makes $11 million this year. Yeah. That's what. Or next year.
Okay. I'm gonna give it to T. Ross. I'm not afraid. I'm not scared. We're not scared on this podcast.
JD, you're great at capitalizing on the most obvious things right after they happen.
I'm not scared.
So you don't. Yeah. So you're really gonna go out there and say Terrence Ross isn't playing well?
I take that as a compliment. No, I'm not just gonna say Terrence Ross isn't playing well. I'm saying I don't see Terrence Ross turning this around ever. Like, I don't ever see him justifying this contract. And I really do believe, almost at this point, Masai Ujiri would probably take it back.
Yeah, I mean, there's not a lot to like about what you see from Ross.
He's not shooting well. He's not playing well.
He's not playing well. His confidence is shot, clearly. He's all up in his own head, as they say. My thing with Ross is, how come we're not seeing more Norm Powell now? I mean, like, I've written Ross off for the near future. Like, he's not turning around anytime tomorrow. Maybe this week. I don't know. I doubt it. I haven't seen anything to suggest that. So why wouldn't you play Norm Powell?
I have no answer to this question. Terrence Ross is net rating right now. Whenever he's on the floor, they're a net rating -8. He just sewers them immediately. He's worse defensively. They're -4 on their defensive rating, and they're a -4 on their offensive rating. He's not good for this team right now. And that Suns game, same thing. He gets lost on defense. A lot of those threes, Suns shut the lights out. The Raps played poorly as a team. Those threes, a bunch of them are getting open looks because Terrence Ross is lost on that end of the floor.
I'm not giving up on him as a player.
I am.
Unlike JD, I'm not giving up on him as a player. But right now, I don't see how you can't just send him to the pine, bring the next man up, and see how he does. Because Ross is not bringing you much on the court now. Okay, what's the next one? We got one more?
Hey, James Johnson.
A dunk in big-time style with James Johnson stuffing it right into the first row, clearing out bodies.
Think before you tweet, man.
Good question.
What is the question?
All right.
You should think before you tweet.
Should one think before they tweet?
Yeah, should one apply thought to one's tweet? Okay, I know we obviously know what this is in regard. James Johnson tweeting out that he was
hashtag mood
underutilized. And then he left a tweet up, which some people were kind of cool with. And then he did reply an apology that said basically to the effect of, my bad. I just want to be a part of something special for the fans, coaches, yada, yada, yada.
Well, I have no problem with the sentiment. And in fact, I tell my bosses that kind of stuff all the time. I mean,
your bosses are always like, why did you say that? You have to retract. Dave, apologize.
It's a constant conversation. But my point is that like that's how you should feel. You should feel like you can contribute more and that you should be called upon to contribute more, et cetera, et cetera. I like that from him, but the medium.
I just think it's really short-sighted. Well, not only Twitter. Your team just came off of a big win. You came off a big win on Drake night. Everybody's feeling good about the team. There's no negative angle to this thing. And then all of a sudden you cause a stir a little bit of a wrong way. So poor form, James Johnson, but I'm not reading anything into it. I think he's a smart enough guy to figure it out. He'll be good.
Played well after that.
He plays well every time he's on. And when he plays within himself, when he plays his game, James Johnson basketball, he's a positive player. He is the Raptors' second best player when it comes to plus minus. So
another guy who you'd like to see him kind of take that Terrence Ross role.
The only thing is he can't shoot the three. That's the one thing in JJ's game.
You have to change the way you play.
He's excellent cutter.
The Raptors would have to change, not James.
Excellent cutter, good passer, good defender. Every once in a while plays a little outside of himself. That's what gets him in trouble. That's what costs him minutes.
All right, well, JD, listen, we're going to take a quick timeout here on the other side of the tip. We're going to talk to your buddy Josh.
That was like an NBA TV throw. You're like, on the next side of the tip.
Well, it's just such a natural way to say that.
Yes. I could hear Rick Camilla. Like, that was your best Rick Camilla impression.
Well, it's like, I need to think on my best Rick Camilla impression. There's something there. But
coming
no,
up,
that's, I'm always
the 1989
told,
Bulls, that's always what he...
My guy, KG, but what I'm trying to say is, like, we're always being told, don't say the word break. For whatever reason, they're always like, don't say break.
We're trying to trick you.
So what are we doing? We're saying...
We're taking a pause.
We're taking a pause.
Let's be cool. Like,
see you on the other side of the tip. Anyways, coming up, we're going to have our market watch, looking around some of the stories around the rest of the NBA. And also, JD's buddy, Josh, is going to join us, a diehard Lakers guy. We're going to talk Kobe, Lakerland, and more. Right after this. All right, this is Free Association. JD, let's get right to it, man. There's a lot happening around the NBA. We're only going to be able to scratch the surface, but let's do it. This is our market report, market watch.
Free Association Market Report.
Okay, so, JD... Buying or selling? That is the question. All right. First up here, JD. Buying or selling the Philadelphia 76ers quote unquote process? This is a loaded question, by the way.
Is this even a question? Selling.
I've
already sold it. You're buying?
No.
Oh, God.
I can make an argument for it, but
okay.
Go ahead.
So we put this one in because Jahlil Okafor got in the news. That's putting it lightly. But got on
a
some
couple
TMZ.
Of times this week.
Yeah, so one, it's like, so this was kind of a roller coaster week for Jahlil, right? Because we see him knock the guy out and you're like, oh, Jahlil, what are you doing? And then it's like, oh,
no,
somebody put a gun in his face the next day. And then you're like, oh, well, now he's feeling kind of like overprotective. So maybe this isn't all his fault. He's a little rattled. And then it's like, oh, now he's actually driving 107 miles per hour and he's getting pulled over. Not a great look, bud.
So, okay, what does this have to do with the process, you ask?
The process is that I think that there's... This might not change everything. Jahlil Okafor might have still made these mistakes, but I think these mistakes are less likely in that you're able to learn a little bit more, be protected a little bit more when you have veterans on your team. And the thing that really drives me nuts about the Sixers is how they've just decided we would rather use roster spots on complete losers than on a couple of veterans that can show the guys how to play
like
in the league.
Like a Minnesota model with Andre Miller, Tayshaun Prince,
Minnesota,
Kevin Garnett.
Flip Saunders, the architect of this Minnesota team looks like a absolute genius. Because if you look at the way that that team's flourishing, they're a dark horse, and not even a dark horse at this point, but they're a team that's in the mix for that eighth playoff spot already, and their young guys are flourishing. You look at Philadelphia, and it's just a wasteland. Nobody's getting better.
It doesn't hurt in Minnesota having two generational players in Wiggins and Towns, especially Towns.
Hey, again, of course, who you get is a ton of it, but let's not pretend like the Sixers didn't draft Nerlens Noel, who was supposed to be a big-time player. He was a guy that a lot of people thought was going
to
be the first.
Never supposed to be like a Towns.
Sure, but they thought that he was going to be a first overall pick. Jahlil Okafor for a long time was another guy that they thought was going to be another first overall pick. He was exactly that. No, but I just think that they're not putting these guys in a position to succeed, and it's really hurting them, and it's embarrassing for them. And I find it hilarious, just a little side note. The Sixers are favored against the Lakers.
Well, we were talking about, what?
Yeah, their upcoming game, the Kobe Bowl, Kobe's final game in Philadelphia.
Yeah.
The Sixers are favored in that game at home. How unbelievable is that?
How is that even possible?
I know.
That can't be right.
You look it up. They're favored right now. So I'm going to be betting. If gambling was illegal, I would bet on, or legal, I would gamble on.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the Warriors. How long are they going to stay undefeated? How long before the Sixers are going to get a win?
Well, this
man.
Is their best chance. This Lakers
so they've lost like 30 games going back to last season. Or something.
Yeah, I just like I hate the infrastructure. I think that it's a total sham. And
here's the counter argument to that. Obviously, you're setting up such a losing culture, and to bring players up in that environment, like you're saying, is not good. Is there a huge connection between Okafor and the Sixers process? I'm not so sure. I think when you hear stuff like the guy says in that TMZ video, the guy says, "Oh, the Sixers suck," and he goes, "Yeah, but we got money." You know, like that hurt, you know.
But that's
you
an immaturity,
like that.
But the thing is,
I don't think it has anything to do with the process.
If he's out and he's learning from a veteran, or he's out with a veteran who's been there before
and who knows
to push him and be like, let it go, things might be a little different. I'm just saying there's an immaturity that's being bred in that around that team and that culture, and I think it's stemming outside. I don't think it's a coincidence.
And you mentioned like a guy like Towns, and that is the only argument I could see for the process regardless. Is that in the NBA, we talked about with Dalton, like you're not to get a big name free agent to sign for your team is one of the least likeliest things in pro sports, in the NBA at least.
But Philadelphia is like a classic franchise.
That
like
doesn't matter because they're a loser franchise.
But that's what I mean. So win. Try to win and then attract people through winning, and not by losing.
Even then, you have such a small chance to get a name who's good enough to make you, let's say, a title contender. But one place you can build is through the draft. And so if you're Philadelphia and you're saying, like, we just got to hit one. It's like playing the lottery over and over. We just need that one guy, that one Towns, that one whoever it is to bring us over the edge. They missed with Embiid. They missed with Noel.
They missed with Saric.
Who knows? He's going to be there next year.
No, well, we don't know that, though. We don't know that Saric is going to be there next year.
But even if they didn't miss with Saric, is he going to be that good? Probably not.
No.
And Okafor, maybe he's the guy, he's pretty good, but
he looks good, but he kind of looks like Big Al 2.0.
Anyways,
where it's
that's
not
the only
be
argument for still keeping up with the process is really like your alternative.
But do you believe in it? So are you buying
better. It? All that being said, hell no, I'm selling.
Yeah, exactly. Selling, so there we go.
Okay, next one up: buying or selling the Indiana Pacers as the second best team in the East.
They currently are the second best team in the East.
Why are you buying this
and
as a trend?
I am buying it. Oh boy, am I ever
really?
Buying it?
So essentially, you're buying Paul George stock.
Yeah.
More than anything else.
And I wish I would have bought Paul George stock a month ago because I'd be rich. I'd be swimming in it, baby.
In our preview, we asked, is he going to return to top 10 form?
He's there. He's there in a big time way. Yeah. So Paul George this season, he's averaging 27 points per game, eight rebounds, 4.5 assists, a steal and a half, and he's turning the ball over a measly less than four times a game. Not measly, but that's not bad. He's shooting 45% from three and 46% from the floor. He has been unbelievable. This is all to say, too, he's one of the best two-way, and Frank Vogel says he's the best two-way player in the NBA, playing lights-out defense every single night. I'm buying it because I think that he's so ridiculously good that he's able to carry them into another echelon in that league. And I love they're playing an excellent small ball lineup right now. They've got three guys that are hitting it over 40% clip from three that are starting for them.
CJ Miles. Paul George.
And George Hill.
And the always underrated George Hill.
Is underrated, having a really good season. The other thing I really like about this team in the small ball that's working, they're forcing turnovers. Every single guy on the team averages over a steal a game right now.
I was hoping you were going to bring up the Hickory High jerseys.
I don't know how I feel about those.
Those are my colors, man, like wine and gold. I like that pairing.
Yeah, it's a nice pairing. I just don't think it looks like a sharp NBA.
I'm going to sell on the Pacers because they're one Paul George injury away from being...
Oh, why are you going to put that juju out in the world, Dave? That's your argument? Paul George might get hurt?
And then after that, they become a very, very average team. So yeah, that's why I'm selling on them finishing the season as the East's second best team. Plus, I still like Atlanta better. I like the depth there.
By the way, Paul George, defensive rating when he's off the floor, -6. So opponents are 6 points worse. Like I said, defense-wise, trying to value his defensive metrics, he's got a major impact.
Buying or selling the Houston Rockets or the Los Angeles Clippers as a team that can turn it around this season and still contend?
I'm going to sell the Clippers, buy the Rockets.
Oh, you think the Rockets are going to turn it around?
Rockets are more likely for me to turn into contenders than the Clippers. I don't think the Clippers can win the NBA title. I think there's a narrative where I could see the Rockets winning.
Wow. I don't like either, but I really don't like what's going on with Houston.
So are you
going to
sell both?
Yeah, but if you need me to make an argument against your Clippers hate, I can do that.
Okay, so...
Yeah, I'll make my argument really quickly.
Sure.
Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan.
Pretty good.
Enough talent to make something happen there, you would think. And Griffin's been great so far.
So here's the thing. I think that talent pool is great, but it's not better than Ibaka, Westbrook, Durant, and it's certainly not better than the eight guys that Golden State throws at you every single game. So I just don't think they can compete with that. So let me get back to you need to have guys that can defend on the wing, and we lauded the Clippers as the big offseason winners. These guys went out and they landed three big wings in Paul Pierce, in Lance Stephenson, in Josh Smith, that they were like, this is really going to help their team. None of these guys has been able to do it. And now over the last little while, they started Wesley Johnson and Luke Mbah-Aboute because they're trying to figure out their wings. They're in such desperate or dire straits when it comes to that position. I'm worried whether or not
Paul Pierce, you brought it, I know you accidentally brought it up, but he's, it's hard to watch him play right now.
Yeah, he's really slowed down.
They need
down.
To make the playoffs because then he'll wake up, obviously.
I think, yeah, you're right. I am not worried about Paul Pierce in the playoffs at this point. I think that he's still going to be able to provide something for them. But I look at Lance Stevenson's minutes have been up and down. He's been very inconsistent. Jamal Crawford looks like
a mess, man. That whole team.
But that's what I mean. I don't think
the utilization.
I don't think you can have DeAndre Jordan on the floor in crunch time, especially against a team like the Warriors. The Warriors are not going to allow you to keep him on the floor, and if they do, they're going to eat him up, and they're going to put him on the line.
I'm more interested in why you think the Rockets are going to turn around and become contenders.
Okay, so I think the Rockets I'm buying them because I think that based on where they were last year and where I think they can go this year, they are more likely to be a title contender. They have Dwight Howard, a guy who, despite all their poor play, has been playing pretty well this season so far. He looks healthy. He's been playing a lot. He's been playing solid. He even got a shout out from Daryl Morey when they fired Kevin McHale as the only guy that's still playing well on this team. James Harden, to me, is still a top five player in the NBA when he's on. He can't be stopped. He's the type of star power you need in that series. I think the Rockets are better off going to Pat Beverly, and he's somebody that can slow up and agitate and at least get under the skin of the likes of a Steph Curry or a Tony Parker or a Russ Westbrook. And I think Ty Lawson is a good basketball player, and if he gets put in the right role, they'll be better.
Well,
Clint Capella is playing
any worse.
Terrence Jones is a solid player.
Jones
Trevor Ariza,
okay.
I'm a big fan of. Another solid wing defender that can knock down threes. I just think that it's more likely that that core of players, that group of players figures it out and is able to hang with the Western Conference's top teams than the Clippers, who I feel like are the exact same team we've
you're
seen
only
the
as
last
good
couple
as,
years.
You're only as good as your best player, and I can't stand what I see from James Harden from almost every standpoint.
Dropped 50 the other night.
I know, because he does that, and he can do that, and he's really good at basketball. But it's the body language, the lack of commitment to defense. They're all just such loser qualities that I feel like Donald Trump right now. He's a loser.
But that's the thing, though. The Rockets have surrounded him with good pieces, where it's like if he's playing with Pat Beverly, with Trevor Ariza, with Clint Capella, with Dwight Howard, it helps mask him.
Good counter-argument. Okay, one more. Buying or selling. Okay, you know what? Let's do this... Let's tease this and then we'll talk about it with Josh Goldberg coming up next. It was buying or selling Kobe Bryant as a top 10 player in NBA history. But we got Josh here, so I want to talk to him about
before
that.
Before we do it, though, give me your 10.
Wilt, MJ,
Wilt first.
Kareem. This isn't in order. Okay. This is off the top of my head, too. Been put on the spot. Kareem, Shaq, Elgin Baylor, LeBron, Duncan. I'm missing some obvious people here.
Bill Russell.
Bill Russell, of course.
Larry Bird.
Magic Johnson. And my 10th would be... Ooh,
you had Shaq in there. You're not putting Kobe in, eh?
Yeah, it'd be like Bird versus Kobe is kind of the conversation.
Okay, so my 10, if we're not doing order, I'm going to go Kareem, Wilt, Duncan, Magic, Michael.
Got all of them.
Russell.
Yeah.
LeBron.
Yeah.
And then that's kind of where things get tricky.
Bird Kobe.
But that's what I mean.
Bird Kobe. There's got to be other guys.
I'll take Bird.
What about Dr. J?
Nah, not top 10. Come on. That's insane.
Oh, I put Elgin Baylor in mine. That's what I
did. Yeah, you did, which is too high for me. I'd put Oscar Robertson in mine. And then as my 10th guy, I don't know, you're probably swinging around like Akeem.
Mike James.
Yeah, Mike James.
No?
Akeem's up there. He's up there for me.
All right, well, listen, we're going to get into this with Josh coming up next, placing Kobe Bryant among the all-time greats. Let's do it.
Free Association's Top 5 Fantasy Flops with Alex Xera.
All right, guys, coming in at number 5, it's Boston's David Lee, who was one of my sleepers going into the year, and admittedly, it just has not gone well so far. He's only averaging 15 minutes a game, splitting time with Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk. And you were pretty much banking on Lee playing a little bit more than that coming off the trade with Golden State. He was a double-double guy from like 2008 to 2013. The playing time is just not there right now. And David Lee, who I thought was a good sleeper going into the year, is my top 5 dud. Number 4, Goran Dragic in Miami. He was drafted as a top 60 player, and now he's being dropped. He's owned in about 87% of leagues. Points are down. Field goal percentage is down, and his number of field goal attempts is down because Bosch is healthy, Wade is pretty healthy, Hassan Whiteside has taken a bigger role in this offense, so all of this is taking a toll on Dragic, who should still be on a roster in most leagues, but you'd have to be hard-pressed to play him unless you had to. Michael Carter-Williams comes in at number 3. He has been benched in Milwaukee. He's even said he wouldn't start himself. Just 16 minutes on Sunday, and Jason Kidd says he liked what he saw from his starters in the game over the weekend. So you got to play out and see how long MCW is going to be on the bench. He's averaging 10 points a game. You know, he's getting some rebounds and steals, but overall his numbers are down and the playing time is down. So again, I wouldn't really cut bait, but it's hard to play Michael Carter-Williams right now. Nerlens Noel was a top 25 pick in drafts this year. His points and his boards are pretty much a slight improvement over last year, but you were still expecting a lot more. Consider the injuries. Hasn't really found chemistry with Jahlil Okafor. It's been a bit of a problem so far with Noel, who's still averaging over 30 minutes a game, but to take him in the second round, you were hoping for more. So Noel is number 2, and Ty Lawson is number 1 on the list for me. Lawson was a DNP for interim coach JB Bickerstaff on Sunday. They're going with Patrick Beverley and Jason Terry at the 1, and that's it. So Lawson should be on pretty much every single waiver wire out there until something changes, but I don't expect that to change for a little bit. Lawson, number 1 on my duds list early in the NBA fantasy season.
My name is Jordan Kilgannon. I'm a 6'1 professional dunker, and you're listening to Free Association.
All right, welcome to Free Association. Right now, you know, apparently watching a lot of Lakers games, that's enough to get you in the door on Free Association. We got Josh Goldberg in here right now, a huge Lakers fan. JD, this is your buddy from the Fan 590.
This is my buddy who I would say I live to tease, this man. I do. I was a lifelong Laker sufferer. I was a big Sonics fan. I hated the Lakers growing up. I loved those Orlando Shaq teams. And then to make matters worse, Shaq went to like my most despised franchise ever, the LA Lakers. But with Kobe's impending retirement, I had to bring in my buddy because I had to hear it. Like I said, we could have had anybody on the show to talk about Kobe Bryant. We had Tracy Murray last week, and then people got all hyped up. We had Meta World Peace. We had two people within the Lakers organization on our show to talk about him. And then this week, people lined up. They wanted in. But I just wanted one guy, and that's the guy that takes the brunt every day for me. Like, the only man who stands on D'Angelo Russell's corner other than maybe D'Angelo Russell's parents. The one, the only, the infallible Josh Goldberg. How you doing, buddy?
Thank you. You don't think D'Angelo himself is saying, like, no, oh, yeah, I deserve to be a Laker? What does he think? He should have been the 15th pick in that draft?
He should have been a Sacramento King. Okay. That's where he should be. Yeah. Like, although then we wouldn't have the Rajon Rondo stuff that's been going on. Maybe we would, maybe we wouldn't. But so the first thing I got to ask you is, we Dave and I talked a little bit about whether or not Kobe Bryant goes down as a top 10 player in NBA history. And I want to know, you can be biased, you can say what you want from your little heart. Does Kobe finish top 10?
I think 10 or 12, I think. So I was doing a list today and he was my number 10 player of all time. But I could certainly understand if somebody wanted to put Elgin Baylor ahead of him or Jerry West or Hakeem Olajuwon or guys like that.
Baylor is always a guy who I thought should be higher up on everybody's list. And he's kind of almost like the most victim of circumstance of any player ever. I mean, that guy was unbelievable. But when you look at Kobe, I mean, the championships were there. The numbers are there. I mean, I think maybe it's easy to get caught up in like the all-time stats, and maybe that it makes you paint things in a different kind of filter, because it's hard to look at those numbers and not think this guy's clearly one of the best players ever. And then when you think about it in his prime, I mean, he was unbelievable. And the past 3 years, 2 years, has really kind of soured his legacy in some ways in a lot of people. I mean, you listen to Kevin Durant. You heard Durant today?
Yeah.
We're taping this on a Monday. I mean, like, Durant's making it sound like everyone's been crappy on Kobe forever, but it's just because he is playing bad. He is poor now. I mean, how much does that kind of, like, alter your view on this guy the last 2 years?
A little bit. I mean, it's been really tough to watch him just, like, struggle so much. He just doesn't have anything left in the tank. It's empty now. I mean, everybody has recency bias just in life. People react to things that happen right in the moment. So I think that's happening a little bit. But I've always thought Kobe got a little bit of a raw deal because he's not really the most warm and cuddly guy.
The guy who played with Shaquille O'Neal and Pau Gasol and Karl Malone and Gary Payton. What a raw deal that guy got. coached by Phil Jackson.
No, but, you know, I think it's huge. And, you know, Alvin Williams.
Oh, poor Kobe.
Alvin Williams was on your guys' station, and he was actually talking about it. He made a great point, which is that, you know, it's Kobe's probably going to look back and be so thrilled that he was able to get those rings without Shaq on the team, like in the Pau Gasol years. Yeah. Because now you can look at it and say, you know, you didn't need Shaq. You could do it on your own.
Exactly.
Listen, we're not confused, though, that when the Lakers won those championships, Shaq was the best player on those teams.
No question.
No
he was,
bones.
He was
okay.
The most dominant player on those teams and the best player on those teams, but they would not have won those titles.
Without Kobe. But, yeah, we look at the years Kobe won his title after the Shaq departure, averaging 30 plus points a game. He was just absolutely ridiculous. I remember, I can still remember watching him and just thinking, there's no way that this guy, he's going to will this team to a championship. Once they got Pau Gasol, I think it was pretty sealed. But
before that, the players around him were garbage for the most part. You think like the Smush Parker years. I mean, he didn't have.
It's funny that's he didn't have the guy everybody remembers from those terrible teams.
Dude, he's a memorable player.
But no, but it's because Kobe. Kobe smushed.
The Vlad
that's
Rad
right.
years, the Radmanovich era.
Hey, don't disparage Radmanovich. He's a Sonic at the core.
Yeah,
like, that's
true.
Who he is. Yeah. He's a true blue Sonic. Yeah. But I just look at Kobe and it's hard for me to put him in the top 10 just because of the ineffectiveness. And like I said earlier, just 502 more missed field goals than any other player in NBA history.
But how much of that is a product of you're the guy who needs to take those shots? You're taking the last second shots. Yeah, I know he's a ball hog to begin with.
There's some of that.
Still.
But the thing is like Kobe's going to do what Kobe wants to do. And that's been kind of my issue with him down the stretch these years is that, especially this season, obviously, has been he hasn't shown kind of the grace that other elder players have shown in the past where they kind of know it's time to pass the torch. He seems to just continuously, this is part of why we love Kobe Bryant, that he's like, I will not be defeated.
Well, that's what I was
going
to say. And Josh, I want to get your thoughts on it. But like what you're saying is I've had kind of the opposite where as the years go on and there's more and more obvious reason for him to kind of take that humble approach or whatever
year,
you want to
why?
Say. He's just gotten more and more, you know, I am what I am. This is me. Take it or leave it. And I love that about him. And I used to find it annoying, but the older he gets, the more it's kind of endearing. I mean.
Yeah, I totally see that. I mean, it seems like people sort of just came around to him. He's always, nothing about him has ever changed. He's
always been
the same in the media. And people just all of a
Since
sudden.
Since he was like 18.
Yeah. And now people are like, oh yeah, Kobe, you know, Kobe's great. He's such a great soundbite. He's a great quote. But then 10 years ago, Kobe was this big jerk. You know, he was surly, selfish. Nobody liked him. And now, you know, it's just like,
maybe,
oh, he's old.
Who do you
so
side
whatever.
With when it comes to Kobe Shaq, by the way? I've never asked you this.
It's a legitimate question. I mean, the whole thing with the allegedly accusing Shaq of, you know, cheating on his wife, with that interview with Jim Gray, that sort of shifted me to Shaq. And then there was the rap video after he lost in the finals.
Show me how my ass tastes.
Yeah, and to Boston. And I thought that was like a little in poor taste. Like he had just lost by 40 points.
I loved it.
Yeah, I was a big fan of that.
It was so good. I always loved Shaq. I never liked Kobe.
It was a good freestyle if it was a freestyle.
Not bad.
The lines that preceded it. Yeah, it was not bad.
Hey, listen, anybody that has had the illustrious rap career of Shaquille O'Neal better be able to break out four bars. When you look back kind of at his career, I guess two things. One is that, is he your favorite Laker? And two, like, what's the memory that stands out for you, like, when you think of Kobe Bryant?
He's my favorite athlete. He's my favorite Laker. He's my favorite athlete. I mean, he's the reason I like basketball. I mean, I was probably 7 or 8 years old when he first got into the league. And some I remember my first big basketball memory was him airballing those threes against Utah in the playoffs, and it was just, you know, it was tough. I was 8 years old, but I knew enough what was going on a little bit. I was always like that. I could just sort of pick those things up, and it was tough to see. And to be honest, my favorite memory was when they won the title in 2009. It was his first one without Shaq.
Yep.
And he just jumped up in the air, and you could just see it in his face and just everything washing over him, how monumentally huge that win was.
And he's a guy who's always been, you know, winning above everything else, which kind of makes the last year that much harder to watch, knowing that partly because of himself, I suppose, but he's been put in the situation where there's no way you can win basketball games with his team, with your current health. And, you know, I assume that's the biggest reason why he's come out and said he's going to officially call it quits at the end of the season, because it's just hard to keep going on like this.
Honestly, I think it's kind of hard to watch as a fan. I can't remember whose take this is, but it's an excellent take where someone compared Kobe to Kanye West, where you go through ebbs and flows of you love him, you hate him.
There was a quiz out where you had to look at quotes and say whether it was Kobe or Kanye.
Yeah, exactly. Like, there's times where it's just like, I can't stand Kobe. And now that he's reaching the end of his career, I find myself back in that place where I'm like, damn, I'm kind of going to miss Kobe. Like, especially since part of the fun of sports is hating guys.
Yeah.
And there's probably no player that I've hated more in pro sports than that 09-10 season where they... Wait, did they... I always get these confused. They beat the Celtics and then they beat Orlando. Those were the...
Reverse.
Orlando 09, Celtics 10, right? Yeah. So that Celtics year, that I was pulling really hard for Ray Allen.
Yeah.
I was pulling really hard for KG. I really liked those Celtics teams. I was very... I kind of adopted them a little bit after... That was kind of the first like love I had after the Sonics, right? The Sonics went, but I stuck with Ray Allen. I was like, you're the last true blue Sonic. And I remember just watching Kobe go to work against in that finals and just, oh, couldn't stand him. But I miss those feelings. Like, I don't really have that towards a guy anymore where I watch him play and I just can't stand him. Like, I've always liked LeBron James. I've always revered LeBron James. I've respected his game. I've liked him as a person. The guy I probably root for against the most is Dwight Howard. And now I'm even coming around on him because it's like he's the guy that's kind of transformed a little bit into... Almost he's hated so much that I feel a little bad for him. Like, I'm like, he's not that bad. Like, when he was in Orlando, he was like one of the most beloved guys in the league. And then the Lakers thing happened. And by the way, how'd you feel about that quote? He was like, next question.
Yeah.
He did actually say some nice things after.
Yeah, he said he was one of the greatest to ever play the game. I mean, I have a personal bias towards Dwight Howard. I think he's an idiot. So great player, not as great as he used to be, but just an idiot, a stupid guy.
I want to hate, like, you know, I hate the Thunder, but I want to hate them, but I can't help but love Russ Westbrook so much. Like, everything about him, the way he handles the media. Would you say Russ is kind of taking the torch from Kobe as, like, the uber competitive jerk
that takes
all the shots that make guys go, like, what is he doing? And
then
other moments you're like,
there.
Wow, no one else can do that. He's kind of the Kobe torch passer. But
he's going to be such a curmudgeon when he's in Kobe's career. Did you see
the Reggie Jackson thing? Just quickly on that, is where they asked him about Reggie, and
he's like, who?
Yeah. And then Kevin Durant called him, didn't even mention him, and he just made sure to mention that he called Kentavious Caldwell-Pope their second best player. They don't like Reggie Jackson.
Last thing here on Kobe, and then Josh. You know, Josh is also on the fantasy show, which I believe is called the fantasy show.
It is, yeah,
nice. And I want to get you to touch on real quick. We had our fantasy top five. During the break earlier, which is brought to us by our buddy Alex.
We're not going to talk about Kobe and the rape.
But first,
that's the one we're gonna just no way. We're just gonna not touch that. That's fine.
Yeah, I'm moving.
You were with him the whole way, right? You're just there. You were like, yeah. I believe you, Cove. Doesn't matter that you put ring on your wife's finger and held the press conference.
What I was gonna say was the moment, you know, especially for our listeners, that probably sticks out with Kobe is the 81 points.
Yeah.
And it's hard to overlook that.
Where'd you watch 81?
Where were you guys when that happened?
I watched it. I was in 11th grade, and I was just watching it in my little upstairs TV room. I stood the entire second half. I was just like in awe of what was happening. He just was getting the ball, and it was just like, all right, he's just going to shoot this ball from literally any spot on the court, and it's going to go in. That was the point we were getting at. And we'll never see anything like that again.
You know what the worst, like for me, I got a horrible confession.
You didn't see it.
I didn't watch it.
Really?
No, I went to bed that night and I was like, I had no interest in watching it. I don't know what happened. I just like, I didn't watch it. And I remember my roommate waking me up. I was in college and he woke me up and he goes, guess how many points Kobe scored last night? And I was like, I don't know. He loved Kobe too, my roommate.
Because also Kobe was in the midst.
I was like 50.
He was in the midst of averaging like 48 over the last 30 games.
He was killing it, right? So that's why we were like very into Kobe at that point, watching everything and apparently not everything. But yeah, I remember guessing 50 and then 60. And him just shaking his head wildly. And I was like, 65. Because you start going up by five increments. You're not like going to jump to 81. And when he told me that, was like just immediately like fly open the laptop, watch all the clips. And then rue not watching that game.
Yeah, I remember like getting home kind of late and not catching the first half and just seeing the second half. And all I was thinking was, why aren't they doubling him? Why aren't they tripling him? Like, how come it's still just Jalen on him?
Yeah,
I know. Poor Jalen.
Sam Mitchell. It was not Sam Mitchell's finest moment as head coach.
Mitch.
And yeah, you know, we had Jalen on earlier, and I guess like we could have asked him about it, but he's talked about it a lot. And on Sportsnet, he's talked about it too a couple of years ago. If you Google that, but yeah, it was just like vindictive on Sam Mitchell's part. Right?
Yeah, not a good look for Sam Mitchell at all.
All right, so we're gonna
Kobe will be missed.
Not just by Josh, especially by Josh.
I'll miss hating him. That's what I'll miss.
Yeah, for one reason or another, you're going to miss him. Guys like that don't come around often. Like I said, real quick, I want you to hit on this fantasy list we did because I thought it was pretty interesting. Alex and Sarah looked at the five fantasy flops so far this season. We've all drafted our fantasy teams in our respective leagues. We all have guys we regret.
He drafted his team. He doesn't edit it anymore. He just drafted it.
Oh, he just drafted. That's it. Just draft. Leave Daily it alone.
I check in every once in a while, and then I get depressed that I paid like $80 for Carmelo Anthony, and then I sulk. I log off. I got so into defending Carmelo before the season started that I just went overboard at the end.
You heard his Sixero's list earlier. Just real quick to rip through it: David Lee, Goran Dragic, Michael Carter-Williams, Nerlens Noel, and Ty Lawson. A pretty disappointing list.
Yeah. People were really banking on David Lee, though. Like, shame on you.
Lee was the weirdest addition.
Like, you were just like, oh, I got David Lee in the third round.
Some good names there. Like Nerlens Noel, I mean, he's a guy who I think a lot of people expected at least fantasy production, if not real life. Goran Dragic, I think in both fantasy and real life, he's really not been what we've known him to be. Josh, from the fantasy show, what are some of your most disappointing guys thus far?
Ty Lawson's got to be number one. I mean, I don't know what's going on there. I mean, they fired Kevin McHale, which made no sense to me because I thought he was actually a really good coach, and that was not the answer. They made it to the Western Conference Finals last year with the same team, and they added Ty Lawson. I don't know. I thought he'd really thrive playing in the backcourt with Harden.
Traditionally puts up big numbers as well.
Yeah, and it just hasn't worked out. I mean, the only guy who gets his on that team is Harden.
Right.
Clint Capella's been
Marcus
nice.
Thornton's That's been a pretty nice surprise, though. Like, if
he came out of nowhere. He's cooled down a bit, but
He's just known to have a few games where he'll pour it in.
The thing with Lawson is that if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he can't play his game when he's off the ball standing in the corner.
This is the weird thing. Before the season started, you and I did our Western Conference previews, and you were adamant that Lawson was going to start. And I was like, there's no way. Why would they do that? Because it makes so much more sense to start Pat Beverly. Like, he's the natural fit to be beside Harden.
People feel the need to kind of show how much we've gotten better and tried out big name players. And so you bring a guy like Lawson on, and you don't want to show your fans or the organization that you're going to just plop this guy on the bench. So you're right. Beverly made a lot of sense. But I think teams don't do that. They don't think logically.
I think that they'll, by the end of the season, though, I know we're supposed to be just doing fantasy, but I think that by the end of the season, we'll see Pat Beverly back in that starting lineup and Ty Lawson stapled to the bench a little bit more, coming in, change of pace guy, Isaiah Thomas guy.
Yeah, I agree. See that.
Other flop? What about the guy that's kind of surprised you?
In terms of guys who have surprised me, well, Evan Fournier.
Yeah.
Right? Like, most people picked him up off the waiver wire, and he's, you know, averaging 17 points a game, and he's cooled off a little bit lately, but he's a good player. He's a big guy. He plays guard. You know, he can shoot. He can rebound. He can put it on the floor a little bit. I think he's actually a pretty good player.
I find it very not surprising that you would take a guard from Ohio State that was picked too high in his position as a guy to defend. I've never heard you defend an Ohio State guard that was drafted too high. No.
Now he's talking about Russell.
Listen, I want to toss a name, surprising player your way, and then we'll wrap this up. Another guy who's going to leave a Kobe-like legacy in terms of kind of status and placement on all-time lists and whatnot, Dirk Nowitzki. Absolutely murdering it in fantasy basketball this year. I think everyone expected him to take a Kobe-esque dive down in his career, and he's still doing it.
Yeah, he is. And he doesn't play all those minutes.
Exactly, yeah. He's doing it in less minutes, and he's putting up huge numbers. That's my surprise.
You know what? You killed me again in the preseason when I said that the Mavs were the eighth best team in the West. You were just crushing me about it. And now what? Are they still third?
I don't think anyone's
I think they're
the
third
coming.
As of right
yeah,
now.
They're.
I didn't see this, but Rick Carlisle, like, that's the thing. It's kind of like to go cross sports here, but like Mike Babcock coaches the Maple Leafs, they weren't going to be dead last. Rick Carlisle's your head coach in basketball. There's how many coaches are as good, if not better, or better than Rick Carlisle? Who'd you rather have? Pop? That's it. End of list.
Pop. I really like Frank Vogel.
I like Vogel too, but I don't think I'm taking Vogel ahead of Carlisle.
Like I'd take Carlisle over Doc Rivers.
Oh, no question. That's Doc Rivers, the guy who's just like, hey, whatever, you're starting at wing tonight. His son is the guy who's like, hey, you know what? My son doesn't pass and he doesn't shoot well and he's not a very good defender.
Yeah, Austin Rivers
plays
like,
let's play him a ton.
Austin Rivers is a point guard. Coach. He's a point guard who plays 27 minutes a game and averages one assist.
Something tells me that him having Rajon Rondo, Paul Pierce, Ray Allen, and Kevin Garnett was the most beneficial thing to his coaching career ever. And then landing Chris Paul and Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan, who everybody might have been a little too high on, right? Like, that's when we're talking Mavericks. Like, do they kind of, like, wipe their brow? Like, maybe he's good, but is he franchise player good? I don't know.
I'm not so sure about that. Listen, we got to wrap it up here. Got places to go, people to see. Josh, this has been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for coming in and talking about Vino, which nickname is kind of like not really working anymore.
Who, Kobe's Italian nickname?
Yeah, Vino. Everybody's like, I get better with age. Not apparently, only to a certain point, Kobe.
He gets better with age, but not better with Achilles injuries. It's hard to come back.
I think we're corking that bottle forever now.
Yeah, we will.
Yeah, well said. That was nice. Professional broadcaster.
Yeah, you are
Josh
good.
Goldberg.
You're good.
Okay, so I want
unlike
to tell
Kobe
everyone,
now.
Who, you are like Kobe now?
Oh, I said unlike Kobe.
Oh,
now.
Unlike Kobe. Very
I can't.
Much
I gotta
Kobe.
Keep getting the digs in. You're wrapping it up, and I'm like, I have all these other Kobe jokes to make fun of.
You're gonna keep dropping them. At least make them funny.
I know.
All right. So remember, everyone, you can catch us on iTunes every Tuesday. A new episode is out on sportsnet.ca on other what they call pod catchers. I'm not sure what that is, but apparently they exist. JD, what's going on Brady and Walker this week?
We got Kevin Pelton tomorrow, the excellent ESPN insider. Before you go, Josh, when can we catch Fantasy Show and where can we catch it as well?
You can catch the Fantasy Show Sundays at 9 on the Sportsnet Radio Network. The podcast is up Fridays in the afternoon. I'll fill in during football season, and then once we transition over to baseball, it will be me, Dan Riccio, and Alex Sixero every week.
I look forward to doing that just so I can know which guys you guys are targeting on the waiver wire and spend a little bit extra money on them.
Or avoid them altogether.
Also, Masai Ujiri probably.
When you say Kevin Pelton today, Tuesday?
Tuesday. Today is Tuesday. Today is Tuesday. It is Tuesday.
We're taking it on a Monday.
No.
Okay, so
this is live.
Kevin Pelton and Masai Ujiri and Brady Walker. That's pretty cool.
Yep.
Masai is just always a great interview. On sportsnet.ca
this weekend.
That's right. This Saturday, Giants of Africa, a big event. Hit up sportsnet.ca. We're going to be covering the event. You can catch it on TV as well.
Do you think Jonathan Bernier will be there? That's my number one question.
I bet he doesn't show this year.
I have a gut feeling Jonathan Bernier.
He just starts reciting Wikipedia facts.
He's lost 19 straight games. Yeah, that would be the best if he did show up. And he was like, I misheard last time. I'm actually the biggest Nelson Mandela fan ever. I know everything about him.
So also on sportsnet.ca, we're going to have coverage of that. I want you to check out Agent X. Really excited about this. We're going to have an NBA agent, a current NBA agent, a very active NBA agent, is going to be writing for sportsnet.ca under an alias.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, he's talking.
Good job by you.
First story is going to be about Kobe and about when it's time to hang it up and about that Lakers dysfunction. Your buddy Josh.
Off the air. Can I get two guesses?
Yeah, off the air. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you might not need that many.
I think I need one.
All right. So that's coming up later on sportsnet.ca along with good stuff from Michael Grange and Eric Smith this week. Shameless always plug, good. The Grey Cup was this past weekend. Hit up Amazon.ca.com, whatever you want, and buy the ebook, The Greatest Game, an oral history of the 1989 Grey Cup, the greatest Grey Cup ever.
You're selling that?
I may or may not have written that or as told to. So please go check that out. Also, Sportsnet Magazine is out. Our awards issue coming up. Plenty of cool basketball stuff in there.
I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I'm done plugging. Yeah, you're going to get some Porzingis in the awards issue.
I talked about Porzingis with Mark Spector today, also a fellow Latvian from Sportsnet.ca. Very, very exciting stuff for the Latvians. Everybody's engaged, even the puckheads from out west. They all love him.
He's there's something about him. I'm not sure what it is. He's just like an original. You know, he's like a unique player.
Yeah.
And everyone thought he was gonna be so bad, and he's so good.
That's the best thing I think about him is that he's got the. I think the cornrows thing is what sold everybody.
What I dig about is how the fan perception has just changed like that. Yeah, I know. And that's the most interesting.
I think
thing.
They interviewed the kid that cried, and he said that he has his jersey. You know, the kid from the draft who was weeping?
Yeah.
That's so good.
That kid was faking it.
What a loser.
Anyways, this has been cool. You're listening to Free Association, and now you're not.
This is about all of us. I love you, people.